RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Welcome back in just after 5 o'clock on a little holiday Monday. Getting you ready for the college football playoff. We were talking the world of college football, and here in Oregon, everything's hunky-dory. Getting ready to play Texas Tech. Everything's going great. Around the world of college football, maybe not so much. We mentioned the problems that are going on at Auburn, Iowa State, certainly the programs like North Texas, James Madison, to the point where Tulsa is actually renting out a house and are going to do a live stream, basic Hard Knock style show about the transfer portal. So not everything is going great in the world of college football, and everyone seems to have an idea on how to fix it. And I happened to stumble across an article today by Dan Murphy of ESPN, and you can find his work at Dan Murphy, ESPN. You can find that on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, about one man in particular that is actually trying to, quote, save college football. And it has some relevance here because the team that he's actually funding is a team that Oregon is getting ready to play in the Orange Bowl on Thursday. Dan Murphy of ESPN joins us to talk about his piece on Cody Campbell and his crusade to fix or save the world of college football. Dan, thanks for taking a couple minutes for us.
Thanks for having me. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Now, I read the article. I thought it was really good. I encourage everyone, go to ESPN.com. Again, you can find it on Twitter. It's making the rounds. It's a really good piece. And my first thing that kind of jumped out at me is, yes, the world of college football has a lot of problems right now. And we were discussing this earlier today. It's like, unless you're one of the top 20 schools, I don't know what you do in this current version of it. But I'm also very skeptical that a billionaire that is funding to the tune of $60 million, the Texas Tech football program that's getting ready to play Oregon, I have a hard time believing that he is sincere in, quote, saving college football.
Well, that I think is what how a lot of people feel, and was why I was interested to get to know him a little bit better. This is a guy who's, you know, if right now is chaos, I don't know that anyone has taken better advantage of the chaos than Texas Tech and their main booster, Cody Campbell. You know, I've spent a good chunk of the past couple months with him, so, you know, here on and off, and, you know, his argument is basically that he has benefited quite a bit from college sports, and he's worried that the current system will shrink the big revenue producing side of college sports down to just 15, 20, 25 schools that can afford to play in that big league, and will harm and take away a lot of opportunities for other, you know, potential future college athletes. And so he's trying to do something to stop that, or he says at least he's trying to do something to stop that. I think a lot of the other leaders of college sports continue to question whether his motives are for the greater good or so that Texas Tech doesn't get left behind by the Big Ten and SEC schools, which have much bigger TV contracts than the Big 12.
Yeah, how much of it is it that, because again, as I was reading through the piece, he seems like he's managed to get the ear of the president. He's managed to get the ear of commissioners. He has become a big deal, a big voice in the world of college football. But would this go better or people take it more seriously if he wasn't directly tied to the rise of a school like Texas Tech?
I think so. I think, and probably rightfully so, people question whether he's just in this for himself or for Texas Tech in some way. And, you know, he can say as much as he wants that he's not, but it's hard to prove otherwise, or it's hard to prove one way or the other until, you know, all of the next few years of all the changes that are going to happen in college sports play out. We don't know what his role in it will be yet. But as you mentioned, he spent 10 years or so as a very prominent donor for the Republican Party and has the ear of President Trump and many others. And right now, if you have that level of power and access to the most powerful people in the country, Right now, everybody involved in College Force thinks that the federal government and Congress needs to step in some way to try to help them. And because of that, and because of Cody Campbell's positioning inside the government, he has a lot of influence on what might happen there and how they might try to propose a solution to make things a little bit more sustainable for smaller schools in the future.
Now, when you got to know him, I'm assuming it sounds like he's a very engaging guy. Am I correct in that?
He's a smart guy. He's not necessarily I think when you hear, okay, there's this billionaire down in Texas who's buddies with Trump and he's an oil guy. I think people, these images of J.R. Ewing or maybe Buddy Garrity from Friday Night Lights or something pop into your head where you got this big backslapping Texan yard spinning type of guy. And that's not Cody. He is not bombastic. He's not over the top. He's not a huge storyteller. He's a pretty quiet, reserved guy, but he is clearly a very smart guy and has spent a lot of time thinking about what he thinks the future of college sports should be. So I think I found him really interesting to talk to because he's, thought deeply about a lot of these things. He's lived a really interesting life. He was a college football player himself at Texas Tech, played briefly in the NFL, has created and sold a bunch of businesses and had a ton of success there. And obviously has involved himself in politics on a few different levels. So he's lived a really interesting life. He's only in his early 40s. He's interesting in that sense, but maybe not in the same sort of the way that you might imagine when you just read a headline about him.
Yeah. Does he understand the irony of trying to get the government, because the government intervention, the antitrust thing, does he get the irony of asking the federal government to fix a problem that he has helped create?
Yeah, he does. Not even just that irony. I mean, he's also a free market capitalist Republican who's asking the big federal government to step in and impose something that sounds awfully socialistic and spread money to smaller schools, right? And that too is not lost on him. I asked him about that. And I think to both of those things, he says, yeah, right now the current system is working well for Texas Tech because they have a whole bunch of guys who have made a lot of money, most of them drilling oil just like he did. And they're able to take advantage of that in the same way that Oregon is able to take advantage of how much Phil Knight cares about Oregon's football program and how that's changed things in your neck of the woods for the past 10 or 20 years. And I think so he understands that. I think to some degree, he probably doesn't want to keep paying the bills. He would love it if Texas Tech, the school itself, could fund its roster based on the amount of money it's able to bring in through TV deals. And then, yeah, I mean, the other piece of it is that he told me that he thinks college sports ought to be looked at less like a private business and more like a public resource for good. And that's why he wants the government to get involved to try to preserve some of the things he thinks are important about it.
We're talking to Dan Murphy. You can find him on X or Twitter at Dan Murphy ESPN about his piece on Texas Tech billionaire Cody Campbell. What exactly is his solution to save college football? Walk me through kind of the bullet points on what he's trying to get pushed through.
Yeah, the very simplest version is he thinks that you just need to flood the system with a whole lot more money. And he thinks that the way college sports is run right now, they're leaving a lot of money on the table. As weird as that may sound to fans who hear about these crazy amounts of money that are flowing through the sport right now. And the way you do that is if you're the NFL or the NBA, all of the entire league on the national level gets together and negotiates their TV deals together. All of these sports leagues, their main source of income is television dollars. And right now, college sports is divided in a way where each conference sells their TV rights separately. So they compete against each other and they drive down the price of what they could potentially get if they all banded together to sell their rights. In order to do that, you need Congress's permission to act as one big group and be basically a monopoly of college sports. So he's asking Congress to give the leaders of college sports the ability to do that so they can bring in a lot more money. And then he wants to also revamp, once you've got that big pot of money, he wants to make sure it's spent in a way that preserves sports that aren't the ones driving all the revenue, football and men's basketball, that it preserves women's sports, that it preserves smaller sports at smaller schools. And so he thinks that in order to do that, you either need to throw out the NCAA and start all over again with a new organization or significantly revamp the way the NCAA works in order to get that done.
How on earth would that even, like the idea of, how do you get the Big Ten, the SEC, the eight, how do you get all of them? Is that, like, even if the government were to say, sure, you can do this, how do you get all the entities to do it? What does he say about that?
Yeah, it's a great question, because there are a lot of complications to this, not the least of which is that all of these leagues already have contracts and they don't all line up and change at the same time. So there's no easy date at which to everybody step back from the deals they're currently in the middle of and then re-sign with one big happy family. That would be at least 10 years down the road. And that's presuming that conferences like the SEC and the Big Ten that have a huge lead on everybody else would somehow want to give that up in support of the greater good, or in support of spreading some of the wealth a little bit more, which, I can tell you from talking to a lot of people who run those conferences, they are not interested in doing that at all. I think, you know, his sales pitch, the way that you make that work is you go to the presidents or the leadership of the universities and say, we need this to be a stronger enterprise for all of the United States to use this as the kind of leadership development tool that it's been for a long time. And we will make you more money than you're currently making. Yes, you'll be sharing a slightly larger percentage of the pie with other schools, but your overall earnings will still go up too, because his belief is there will just be so much more money pouring in if you're able to conglomerate all your rights into one big group. Again, I don't, you know, we'll see. There are people that doubt what he thinks might be available out there in the marketplace if that were to happen. But again, as you mentioned, there are a lot of complications there, and it is maybe it's a good idea, but there are a lot of things in the weeds that would have to happen to make that a reality.
How, best way to put this, how much progress has he made? How many inroads has he made to push this? Or is this more of you're just kind of yelling into the void and hoping that maybe it leads to two or three ideas down the road that actually lead to something?
We wouldn't have written about him if it wasn't he wasn't a real serious voice in the conversation. I don't know that the exact plan that he's come up with will ever be what comes to fruition. He is a significant lever and has a significant voice in shaping the future of college sports because of the political influence that he has in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. He told me that he goes to the White House usually a couple times a month to meet with, you know, the administration there and with other people on Capitol Hill in Congress. There have been a few efforts in the past few months to try to pass other bills that would be a little more like they're what the NCAA wants to see happen in order to change the way college sports currently works. And not the only reason, but a very big reason why those bills ended up flatlining and didn't get voted on in the end was because of the influence Cody Campbell has on several people in Congress right now. Mm. So he is somebody that, whether they like him or not, whether they think he belongs or not, he is someone that the current powers of college sports have to reckon with in order to figure out a solution of what comes next.
It does feel like we outlined what some of these universities are facing. Everything from Iowa State to Auburn to North Texas. I mean, you've got a program in Iowa State right now that has 17 players left on their roster. That's the part that scares me. I don't feel bad necessarily for the system that has done this to themselves, but I do kind of feel bad in that sense of, if you're a coach or if you're a fan, what do you do when you're a top 30 program and every year you're having to replace 75 to 80% of your roster?
Yeah, it doesn't work, right? Right now, college sports doesn't work for the players. It doesn't work well for the coaches. It really doesn't work well for the fans. It's a great product still. People still watch it. But I understand why fans would be frustrated with 80% of their roster turning over on a year-to-year basis. And eventually, I think that will catch up to college sports. And I think, as you mentioned, it's really a problem that they've created for themselves. So it's hard to feel really sorry for the powers that be in college sports. But I do think that we're like 80% way through a really messy change of creating something that's more professional at the top end of college sports. But those last 20% of getting to something more stable is going to be really hard, and it's going to cause things to look a lot different than they have in the past.
Before I cut you loose, and maybe this is something that you can't even answer, but if you look in your crystal ball 2-3 years down the road, what's your best guess of roughly where does this thing end up landing? What does this look like 3 years down the road?
I wish I knew the answer to that. I honestly don't. I think anybody who tells you that they know for sure what this is going to look like is lying to you. But I will say that what I would love to see happen, I do think that it would be a bummer if we lost the ability for Northern Illinois to beat Notre Dame on a random Saturday, or for James Madison to have a chance to make the playoff. Eventually, somebody's going to win one of those playoff games from the Group of Five. One of the things that makes college sports terrific is that every once in a while, David can beat Goliath. And I think that's a unique thing to college sports, and I really hope we don't lose that. I think there are ways through that, ways to share the money a little bit to keep hope alive for those smaller schools and give them a chance to climb up through the ranks while still, you know, giving the huge brands, the Oregons, the Alabamas, the Ohio States, giving them the share of the money that they deserve because of how much of the attention that they generate for the sport. It's a tricky needle to thread. I really hope that someone who's smarter than me can figure out the best way to do it, because if nothing happens, if we just kind of continue and let the market guide us to wherever we're headed and move forward with the status quo, I do think we're headed to a future when the top 20 or 30 schools are so much different from everybody else that they decide it's no longer worth playing, not even just the Group of Five schools, but will it in 3 to 5 years, will it be worth it for Oregon and USC and Ohio State and Michigan to play Illinois or Rutgers? Or will the TV companies eventually come to them and say, hey, this isn't doing it for ratings. You guys should just play the SEC schools all year instead. And then, I think the college sports loses something that makes it really special for a lot of fans. And I hope we don't get there.
Yeah, it's weird out here because, you know, we're in Portland. And so we get the two polar opposite sides of the coin, because we have Oregon, obviously, with Nike and Phil Knight, and then we get Oregon State,
right?
Which, you know, of the two schools in all of college football that got it the worst, it was Washington State and Oregon State. So we see both sides of it, and we hear from both sides every single day, and it's such – they don't even play the same sport anymore, those two rivals.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's gotten, like you said, a worse deal out of this than a school like Oregon State, who loses the chance to – and right now I think there's still a window for them to play Oregon and to find a way to play against some big teams. But I don't think, unless something, someone intervenes with a better plan, I think we're headed in a direction where Oregon State, Washington State, those kind of schools won't even have an opportunity to go play against these top 30 or so programs that have been traditional rich rivalries that they've had in the past.
Well, there's one guy trying to make a push, and apparently he's got a voice and he's got people's ears, and you can read that piece. He's Dan Murphy, at Dan Murphy at ESPN. And again, find that piece on Cody Campbell on ESPN and all over social media. It's a really good piece. And Dan, we really appreciate you taking a couple minutes for us, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in Miami in the Orange Bowl, because you do have kind of at one point was viewed as the new rich kid on the block, and now they're really playing the new rich kid on the block.
yeah. Oregon all of a sudden is old money college football, which is funny for those of us who have been around for 10 or 20 years, but it will definitely be a fun game. I appreciate you having me on to talk about it.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you taking some time. That's Dan Murphy of ESPN. We come back, we'll touch upon that. Well, and kind of what Campbell's plan is, and where does college football go? And we'll actually take a look at the college football playoff, and the games are going to be played here in just a few days when primetime rolls on here on 105.1 The Fan.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid, the audience is growing, but the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free, so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Welcome back in, talking a little college football. Interesting conversation there with Dan Murphy on Cody Campbell, the Texas Tech billionaire. And that's the biggest problem that I have with it. And I asked him, and at least Cody is – smart enough to know that it does sound weird that someone who has literally spent $60 million over the last 2 years to fund the rise of Texas Tech. And by the way, that includes pilfering athletes from all over the country to boost. I mean, their entire football team is littered with big money transfers. He spent the same booster that wants to, quote, fix college sports, and not just football, but for everybody. He spent $1 million to go get the best softball pitcher in America out of Stanford to bring her to Texas Tech. Now, they lost in the national title game, but he paid a softball pitcher $1 million to get her to come to Texas Tech. And that's the guy that wants to, quote, fix college sports. And that's my biggest rub that I have with anyone that's talking about this, is ultimately what they want is they want congressional intervention. And I thought Mark Few had a really good quote about this. I don't know if you've seen this one too, but do you realize now that there are people that have played in the NBA that are going back and getting collegiate eligibility?
Yep.
Scott Drew just signed a guy who was a first-round NBA draft pick that's played in the G League.
Didn't J.R. Smith play golf?
Yeah, he played golf. But they signed a guy who was an NBA draft pick that is now going to be playing for Baylor. And Scott Drew, their coach, even said, hey, I know it's bad. It's not a great look, but it's legal, and we need to do what we can to win. Hockey players that have been playing professionally in Europe, the NCAA is granting them permission left and right. I mean, it's crazy right now what we're seeing. There are basically, and Mark Few even said, he goes, this is so stupid, we need Congress to intervene. But he also said, Congress may be dumber than we are. So, you know, you're literally asking someone that can't figure anything out to fix a problem that you have created. But there's really only two ultimate solutions to the world of this college sports conundrum that you're facing. And one is congressional intervention to give antitrust protection, which is what Cody Campbell's looking for.
Yep.
And that's the one that everyone wants. And that's the one that I have the biggest problem with. Because you're saying
more government.
When has more government? And again, I thought it was interesting that Murphy pointed out that that seems very socialistic. Let's all pool our resources and then give it to everybody for a Donald Trump hardcore Republican capitalist that has bought and sold oil to the tune of $13 billion. But you're saying you want Congress to step in and solve a billion-dollar industry's problem that you have helped create. This all could be solved with collectively bargained agreements. If you just admitted that these athletes are employees and everyone came to the table and you came with a collectively bargained situation, you wouldn't have the transfer portal. You could actually sign binding contracts, just like in the NFL. When I signed Lamar Jackson to a 5-year deal, Lamar Jackson can't go leave after a year and go play for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
It also implements that no trade clause where people obviously can't leave after their contract's up or don't have the option to go elsewhere.
Yeah, but you don't want to collectively bargain because that means that you have to give the players a true voice in the way that they are governed and the way they are paid. You can't run it yourself because you can't stop yourself because it is the wild, wild west. But every one of these kids that entered the transfer portal, there'd be an easy way to fix the portal. Stop paying people. If you could get all the schools to get together and be like, yeah, we're not going to keep doing this. But every time someone enters the portal, someone like Cody Campbell is willing to give him millions of dollars. You're willing to give high school kids the Riolas and the Underwoods of the world that have never proven anything, the Arch Mannings, you're willing to give them millions upon millions of dollars for largely kids that go out and underperform. But you keep doing it. So you can't stop yourself. This is like saying, I'm a fat ass. I can't stop eating. I can't stop going to Taco Bell. So I need the government to step in and say that Taco Bell can no longer sell me tacos. I want a law passed that when I go to Taco Bell, I spend more than $9 at Taco Bell because every time I go, I spend $50.
Perfect analogy.
That's what you're asking. As opposed to just going to Taco Bell and saying, hey, I understand that there's an issue here. It's largely on me. I would like to sit down with you and pay you a fair share and we all come up with something that works together. But I don't want to do that. And so that's where you lose me on all this stuff, the idea of congressional intervention. But ultimately, one of those two things has to happen. But I am very skeptical of someone. Like, if you told me that Phil Knight wanted to solve the college football crisis, I would be skeptical.
Very.
100%. I'd be skeptical if the big booster from any school is willing to do this. And I'm not trying to crap all over this guy from Texas Tech. He's just a modern day Phil Knight. Phil Knight had $37 billion and was like, I would like my school to be good. What can I do? I'm going to dump a bunch of resources into this. And now that I can legally, quote, pay kids, if you didn't think that Oregon was paying kids before, I don't know what to tell you. But now that you can, I'm sure DeAnthony Thomas came here out of the goodness of his heart.
I'm sure him and his roofing business are doing fine.
Yeah, he's doing great. But now that you can legally pay kids, of course, Phil is writing more checks. And Oregon's really good. And Cody Campbell sat back and was like, well, this system's unfair, but I can exploit it and I can make my team really good. And so he did. So unless you get some sort of someone without a dog in the fight that can come to the table and get all these different entities together, ultimately this has to be collectively bargained.
And if you do collectively bargain it, who then represents all the players? Because you're going to have someone that oversees the decisions that are, you know, governed by the players themselves. Who then becomes their
spokesperson? I have no idea. Because at least in the world of the NFL, I had someone once ask me this, and this was the biggest thing that I can't stress this enough. In the NFL, it's 32. You got to deal with 32 teams, 32 owners, and you have to deal with, 56 guys on a roster, and then whatever, the 15 practice squad guys. So you do some math, it's a couple thousand. In college football?
Quadruple that.
How many schools are we dealing with at the FBS level? 130, 138? Over how many different conferences? Good luck. I don't know.
136.
136. And what? 100 kids a roster? What do you do? And by the way, that's not even touching on basketball or women's volleyball or men's soccer or wrestling or anything else. I don't know. I don't know how all that gets handled. But this is a mess created by the NCAA, and you're looking for someone else to clean it up. And I don't know. I don't know where the end game is, but I am very skeptical of a billionaire Texas Tech booster who's exploiting the system being the one to have the voice of the president to solve this thing, especially when he's asking for Congress to fix it. That just... When's the last time Congress stepped in on something and was like, yep, everything went smooth? And
when was the last time more government was really good for us at the consumer level?
What does the government run that's good? What do they run that's efficient? What do we all complain about? Our tax dollars being poorly spent. But somehow we're going to get involved in this, and I'm sure it's going to be a fair, equal shakeout for the players. I'm sure those people like Cody that are looking out for the best interest of wink, wink, the players, come on. But something's got to change. But at the same time, the sport right now, at least at the surface level, from a popularity standpoint, it's really high. The TV numbers are great. Interest is up. Revenue's up. Is it sustainable long term? That I don't know. But I'll tell you where I'm going to be on Thursday. I'm sitting on the couch and we watch some college football because we got 4 really good games coming up, and one of them involving your Oregon Ducks. So let's actually talk about what's going down on the field when we come back. Here, though, is Casey with an update. You can text the program 503-864-6326. So it said one big fallacy comparing college football to the free market is that in free market, all parties have an incentive for monetary return for college football. At least for the big donors, it's a passion project, not a monetary investment. So they don't really have a concern in return other than on their investment other than seeing their teams win. It's more like a charity situation. It's true. 100% true. Which is why, I mean, one of the options is, right, private equity. The idea that if you go private equity like Utah, if there's a stake in an investor, that's different than what we currently have. I'll tell you right now, if I was a rich guy, I wouldn't want to write checks. And he kind of brought up, too, that the Texas Tech guy, maybe he is tired of writing the checks. I mean, if you have so much money, maybe it doesn't matter. I mean, if you're Phil Knight, what do you care? You're 80-something years old, and you're going to die, and you're worth billions of dollars, like, whatever. And, you know, Phil, obviously, too, has donated to buildings and names, and, you know, he's honoring his kid.
This, that, and the other.
That's a whole different thing. But I remember, what was it, a week or two ago, Troy Aikman brought up the fact that he wrote a check for couple million bucks. It was to Dante Moore. He didn't say the player, but it was to Dante Moore to get to UCLA.
Yep.
And he said he was there for a year and left and didn't even get so much as a thank you. And Troy Aikman's like, I'm not doing that anymore. And I know Troy Aikman isn't necessarily, you know, Troy Aikman's not worth $500 million or anything, but for UCLA, I'll bet you that's a nice thing for to have Troy Aikman be able to write a check. It was a Dave Portnoy that went out, Barstool guy, and went out and got Bryce Underwood at Michigan. Well, what did that $3 million get you? What did Nebraska have to go to get the Raiola kid? What did that get you? You got a lot of boosters right now that are writing checks for millions of dollars, and they're getting nothing out of it.
Panning.
It's just not working. And so, yeah, it's a charity project, and the only thing you get out of it is to see the return of your school. But that's another one. Like, if I'm an Auburn booster right now, and I'm like, how much money did I pay for my roster? And now my roster is gone. At which point does that dry up? And I think that's kind of the scary thing, is if it dries up at a lot of those places, do you really get to the point where only 25 or 30 schools have the boosters that are willing to continue to write those checks? Because it's not even like you can't even exist anymore just with the large payouts of the TV networks. Like, you're giving each school in the Big Ten or whatever $80 million. That's fine. You still have to have, you know, $30 to $50 million coming in every year just to fund your football team.
Yep.
On top of that. So it does become a very expensive proposition for a lot of people that are viewing this as charity. But how much does charity last when you're not getting the return? I mean, right now it may work, you know, Oregon, Texas Tech, Indiana, Alabama, those teams are in the playoffs. And so whatever check you're writing for those schools, it feels worth it. But if you're bounced in the first round a bunch, or if you're Penn State, or if you're at Auburn, one of those schools, do you get tired of that? But that doesn't change the fact that the product on the field is still really good.
Yeah.
I mean, the first round may have not been the best first round of all time, but a lot of the college football games, when we look at the playoffs over the years, haven't been good games. I mean, hell, the national title game usually isn't a good game.
Yep.
The national title game, more often than not, has been a blowout.
TCU.
It's TCU, it's LSU, more so than it is a true knockdown, drag-out, great championship game. Remember that year Alabama and Clemson was like last team to score. Like, that was a great championship game. But for most of these, I mean, it's Notre Dame getting strangled by Alabama, whatever it was, 27-6. But these games, I think, are all going to be really good games. And believe it or not, I think the best game of them might be Oregon-Texas Tech.
I think so, too.
I mean, when you look at Alabama-Indiana, I think that's an interesting game because I want to see, like, can Indiana really do it? Like, it's funny. Indiana went from little engine that could last year but got exposed against the better teams to they proved it this year. They came back better, retooled, year two under Cignetti, and not only beat Oregon, who we think is a legitimate national title contender, they beat the number one team in the country in Ohio State. But now we look at Indiana and we say, can they do it week after week after week? Because they're down their best defensive lineman. And at the start of the year, they already lost their second best defensive lineman. And you look at from a recruiting standpoint, these aren't the teams that win national championships. There's teams that can make deep runs, see TCU, but they eventually get exposed. So can Indiana do it? I think Indiana can beat Alabama. I don't think Alabama's that good.
That's where I'm at, because that Alabama front seven has to win every battle, like every battle, for Indiana to not be in this game. And Alabama doesn't do that. They don't run the ball well.
No. Well, Alabama has a running back and an offensive line problem, and it's not just Kalen DeBoer. It goes back to Nick Saban.
Yep.
If you go back to that, the Michigan game, right, with Jalen Milroe, what did Alabama struggle to do? They struggled to protect, and they struggled to run the ball. Not only do they not have a very good O-line, they don't have good backs.
And they forced Jalen Milroe to do a lot more than he was capable of doing.
Yes. Jam Miller is the guy that's back and he's healthy and they're going to rely on him. When you look at the history of Alabama offensive linemen and running backs, those aren't there anymore.
That's the identity of their program, and all of a sudden, it's gone.
Yeah, you look at guys, you know, from DJ Fluker to Ryan Kelly to Landon Dickerson, the guys that they were just churning out NFL offensive linemen. And maybe they didn't go on to do great things in the NFL of them, but it was first and second round picks. Proctor, who's their big stud this year that was supposed to be the number one tackle, I'm telling you, watch that
lost
guy.
Lost a lot of draft stock.
He's a big body. You look at the backs that they rolled through there from I mean, the last great one, I mean, Gibbs, Jahmyr Gibbs, who came from Georgia Tech, but I mean, Gibbs was phenomenal. But before that, you had everything from King Henry to TJ Yeldon, Trent Richardson, Mark Ingram. I mean, it was a steady diet of, oh my God, the next back. Oh God, why can't I think of him? The Steelers running back and now in
Najee
Harris. I mean, it was just one after another. And now it's Jam Miller and who? It's just, it's a different team. And this, by the way, started under Nick Saban. Saban had these problems this last year, and it's kind of continued. So I do think Indiana can beat that. I think when we look at Alabama, I think Alabama is only great in name alone. I think Indiana is better than Alabama.
100%.
But week after week, can Indiana do it? Ole Miss, Georgia, I think that's Georgia. They already played once, and that was a close game. It was a one-score game. They beat him by a touchdown. Georgia had the ball 8 times. They scored 8 times. Georgia's gotten better. I don't think Ole Miss has.
I think Georgia's the best team in the playoff right now. And I think a team has to go out and play really good against them for me to think otherwise.
And then Ohio State, Miami, I'm excited about. I don't really think much of Carson Beck, and I can't say that I am in love with Miami, but Miami can play defense.
Yep.
And we've seen Ohio State play a couple good defenses all year. They played Texas. Texas, really good defense. Held them to 14 points. They played Indiana. Indiana, really good defense. Held them to 10 points. Miami right now playing defense, they can hold them down. And if they can hold them down, we may get a knockdown, drag-out fight. I don't believe Miami's offense can get over the hump, but I think that could be a good game.
But they have really good running backs who are capable of breaking one.
But when I get to Oregon and Texas Tech, I think that's the best game.
Yep.
I do. And I think Oregon is better than Texas Tech. I think it's a more complete team. I think they're more battle-tested than Texas Tech. But much like I pointed out with Miami and Ohio State, when Ohio State has played good defenses, what has happened? Hasn't looked great. And by the way, they haven't played a lot of great defenses, but the two best defenses they've played held them down.
Yep.
Held them to 2 scores. And some of that against Indiana was self-inflicted wounds. They missed field goals, but still, hey, at the end of the day, when you look up the scoreboard, what does it say? And when we look at Oregon, who are the good teams that Oregon has played? They played Indiana. What did Indiana do? Indiana held them to 20. And when they played Penn State at the time, Penn State was a good team. In regulation, what did they hold them to? 17. When they played Wisconsin, pretty good defense. Now get bad weather conditions, held them to 21. When they played Iowa, what did they hold them to? 18. Even Washington, to an extent, is a decent defense. And they held Oregon down in the 20s.
They also held Ohio State that entire first half of the game.
Yes. Texas Tech, this will be the best defense that Oregon has played.
Without a doubt.
This front that they will play is, and the linebacking core. Secondary, I think Oregon, given time, and if Dante Moore can get out of the pocket, there's plays to be made. But if you can keep Dante Moore in the pocket, which is what I think Texas Tech wants to do, and eliminate Oregon's run game, and I think Texas Tech is going to be able to do that, this game can be played in the teens. This game can be played in the teens and the 20s. And I think if you do that, the big advantage in this game is Oregon's offense, I think, is a lot better than Texas Tech's offense. I don't love Texas Tech's offense. But if you can play a game in the teens and the 20s, the way we saw Penn State do it, the way that we saw Iowa do it, and to an extent, the way we saw Indiana do it, play a very limited possession sort of football game.
Hard-nosed football game.
You can drag them into deep water. And I think Texas Tech has a shot. And so that's why I think, to me, from a competitive standpoint, this, to me, has the chance to be the best game. And I'm excited about it. It's in the Orange Bowl. We've never played in the Orange Bowl before.
It's going to be a good one.
And I want to see this. And again, I love the juxtaposition of kind of old new money in Oregon and now the new money in Texas Tech. And I don't really have a lot of respect for the Big 12. My team plays in the Big 12. The Big 12 isn't that good. And normally I would tell you that when a team from the Big 12 is going to go play a team like Oregon, you'll get exposed. BYU is a good team. If they played Oregon, they'd lose by 10 points, maybe more. BYU is not that good. But
this Texas Tech team.
This Texas Tech team is not built the way a Big 12 team is built. This is like back in the day when they talked about USC or even Oregon to an extent. Oh, it's a Pac-12 team. This isn't a West Coast soft team. Oregon is rugged.
Yep.
Oregon is rugged up front. They are built differently. And Texas Tech is built differently than a Big 12 team. I'm excited. And it's not just because the Oregon, I don't have a dog in this fight, right? I'm not an Oregon fan or anything. Just from a pure game standpoint. Pure consumer standpoint. If you told me that rank my games that I want to watch or what I think will be the best games, maybe not even what I want to watch, but what I think the best games are going to be, I would go Oregon, Texas Tech 1. I think that thing is going to come down to the wire. I think Miami, Ohio State.
Really?
Yes. Because I think, again, I think Miami is going to keep this close. And then I think I would probably say Alabama, Indiana, and Ole Miss, Georgia. I think that's my power rankings of where I think that's going to be. I think that Miami game, I think Ohio State wins. I think that's got a chance to be a really, really low scoring but competitive game.
I think so too. I think Miami's going to control that time of possession for a lot longer than Ohio State's ready for,
yeah.
And they're going to have to create big plays out of nothing.
I think Georgia handles Ole Miss, and I think Indiana handles Alabama. I don't think those are going to be particularly good games. I think the better team is clearly Indiana and Georgia, and Ohio State's better than Miami. I just think styles make fights, and I think that may end up being a stylistic, rugged, drag you, much like we saw Indiana-Ohio State. It wasn't a great game, but it was a close game, and the number one being Oregon-Texas Tech, and I don't know. I'll pick Oregon in that game, but I don't have a great feeling about it. I think that is going to be a great Orange Bowl, which you can hear right here on The Fan. One more segment, and then we move into the club where we introduce you to the newest member of the Fan and Primetime family, right here on 105.1 The Fan.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
I love Soundgarden. Rest in peace, Chris Cornell.
They got a good sound.
Chris Cornell, that one bummed me out. I'm not a big public mourning guy. That always, like, I have an issue with it. But I've learned to just, I try to shut my mouth because we all mourn in different ways, right? I'm not here to tell anyone like how Charlie Kirk's wife should feel about him dying. I may think it's weird, just like I think it's weird when Kevin Garnett poses in Flip Saunders' parking spot and then has the team photographer come and take a photo so you can post on social network. I find that to be very weird, especially like if celebrities die. Like when Kobe Bryant died, I'm sure that's a bummer for a lot of people, but like you showing up at a downtown like memorial, sitting for Kobe Bryant and then falling on the ground and crying, pardon me, but I think a lot of that is just you want some attention. Like my wife passed away a number of years ago. I've never gone in front of my wife's grave and then be like, hey, can someone film me crying? But I understand we all mourn differently. The celebrity death, like breaking down, has always been a much for me. But I will tell you the Chris Cornell suicide thing bummed me out. That was like one of the very first ones I can remember, like legitimately, like not being okay with. And then like it led me down a whole rabbit hole. I started like kind of digging into like why he killed himself and suicide. And I was in a funk for like 4 or 5 days. And then I was like, what am I doing? Like, yeah, I still have his music. Yeah, I'm bummed. I feel bad for his kid. And it's terrible that it happened. But it's like, I'll be okay. Like, I didn't know him personally. That was just one of those, like, it was like the first real celebrity death that like was kind of a gut punch for me.
The first one that got me was Nate Dogg. I think I was like maybe eight. And he died from a stroke at 47.
You're like Nate Dogg.
Yeah, because I think of
smoke weed every day.
I think of probably like how I feel about that.
Yeah.
Probably more often than not, because celebrities die every day, stuff happens. But that one probably hit me more than I think any other death event.
Really?
Yeah.
Nate Dogg.
He was your Chris Cornell? I was like 10, I think, when Nate Dogg died too.
Has he been dead that long?
He passed away a while ago.
Boy, I don't know why. I always thought, like, I would have thought that was like in the last 5 years.
2011.
Oh my God. All right. Well, my bad. Rest in peace, Nate Dogg. I didn't know that Nate Dogg had that kind of... I just remember Nate Dogg from like every, like if there was like a hook in a rap song, hook, it was Nate Dogg. He was just always in the back. Dude, that's like, by the way, that's underrated musical career of all time. Like when Nate Dogg died, was he like 10 million? What was Nate Dogg worth? I don't have Nate Dogg net worth. Like he had to be like
figures ranging from 500,000 to 1.5 million, no, with reports surfacing in 2024 of around $2.7 million.
That's it? Man, I would have thought Nate Dogg was worth more than that.
I bet he's worth more, too.
I bet that's a good life. I bet Nate Dogg had a sneaky, like, if you had to pick someone that, like, you weren't super famous, but you just had a good life, and think about those, you said he was 47? I bet you those were 47 good years. Like, he lived through the height of that, like, Tupac, Snoop Dogg, West Coast, East, like, Nate Dogg, those are great years. I'm not going to say those were maybe the cleanest years, but I'll bet you those were great years to be Nate Dogg. All right. Of all the people, like, when you said what got me, I was not prepared for you to hit me with a Nate Dogg.
Yeah, I think that's the one that got me the most. I mean, there was a few, like, more recent ones, you know, like artists like Juice WRLD, who I had listened to but wasn't really affected by. But Nate Dogg, when I was 10 years old, I remember being in a parking lot listening to the radio as the announcement came over the radio, and I was a little shook up.
Mm. I just think about that deep. Is it because you guys shared that deep voice? Did you want to be Nate Dogg?
Oh, so badly.
You had that deep voice when you were like 11, and you could be Case Dogg.
Very badly.
It's just, that's all he did. Like, he just, like, I bet you it took him like 30 seconds to do any of those parts. He just would come in and be like, "Ooh, the way
you." It's about it. And then he's got a number one song.
Nate Dogg. Oh, dude, I complete, because I always think of like Warren G, but that was Warren G and Nate Dogg.
Hit the east side on the LBC.
Yeah. On a mission, try to find Mr. Warren G. I completely, you know what? My bad, Nate Dogg. I dismissed Nate Dogg as merely just doing the hook. I did not think about Regulators.
He's got some hits.
Does he have hits or does he have hits?
He has a song right now that's getting more, I guess, praise because someone just did a remix, like an EDM remix of one of his hooks. I can't stop playing it. It's a great song.
Interesting. Someone saying Anthony Bourdain got him to have that life, that job, to die. Yeah, that was rough. I think that's the one, too, is like suicide. That's always like Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Like Nate Dogg had a stroke, which is tragic. Or like I said, to Kobe with the helicopter thing. But like the suicide, maybe that's what shook me. Because it's always that idea of like, if that dude isn't happy with his life, like, what chance do the rest of us
have?
What
chance do I got?
Yeah, my God. And then you realize maybe it's not all that it's cracked up to be. All right, when we come back, the club, and we introduce you and we get to know the newest member of the fan family. And no, it is not Lowercase. We've come to know and love Lowercase, but a brand new member of the Primetime family joins us next here on the club.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid, the audience is growing, but the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free, so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.